Hello and welcome to OU's Nach Yomi. You can find this year posted at ouradio.org/nach or on my website, ericlevy.com, under the recording section.
Hi, this is Rabbi Eric Levy, and I am pleased to bring to you Psalm 59, Tilah Nun Tet. I hope you don't mind the background noise. I am currently in a hospital visiting my mother. Hopefully she is getting much, much better, and hopefully the background noise of the hospital won't disturb you. Tehillah 59 is similar to other recent psalms in that it has an historical event in its inscription. Following the inscription, Lamnatzeach al Tashchet leDavid Mechdam, for the maestro, on a Tashchet, which perhaps means a prevention for destruction, a Mechdam by David, it says, Bishloach Shaul vayishmiru et habayit lahamito, as Saul sent guards to guard the house, i.e. the one David was in order to kill him, that is, to kill David. This refers to an event in chapter 19 in the book of 1 Samuel. There, David is playing music for Saul following their successful battles against the Philistines. Perhaps because of David's success in those battles, it sets off Saul's insanity, and he tries to spear David against the wall. David manages to escape to his house, perhaps thinking that once Saul calms down, everything will be okay. Michal, Saul's daughter and David's wife, tells David that he's wrong, and that if he doesn't hightail it out of there, he will be surely killed the next day. So Michal helps David escape out of a window, and then she sets up a human-like figure on David's bed to fool the guards, who have been sent by King Saul to surround the house and keep David from escaping. Now, some of the content of this psalm matches this scenario very nicely, beginning with a call to God and a general request for salvation, which is typical in individual laments. Hatzileni me'oyivai Elohai, mimitko mamai tisagiveni. Oh my God, rescue me from my enemies, give me a high shelter from those who rise up against me. And then another Hatzileni. Hatzileni mi poale aven umeanshei damim hoshieni. Rescue me from evildoers and save me from murderous people. Ki, giving the cause, ki hine aravu linafshi aguru alai azim lo fishi velo chatati adonai. Because, or behold, they have set an ambush for me. O Lord, the strong, Azim, have surrounded me, though I have not rebelled and I have not sinned. And confirming that he is innocent a second time, and completing the use of the three primary words for sin, which we've seen before, Pesha, Chet, and Avon, David writes, Beli Avon Yerutzun V'yikonanu, for no iniquity, that is, without any iniquity, do they pursue and ready themselves. And based on this innocence, David begs God to help. Ura likrati, arise for my sake, perhaps, and see. And then the psalmist repeats his desire that God awaken himself and help out. The psalmist, Ve'ata Adonai Elohim Tzvaot Elohei Yisrael Hakitza Lifkod Kol Hagoyim Al Tachon Kol Bogdei Aven Sela. And you, O Lord, God of hosts, God of Israel, awaken to punish Kol Hagoyim, all the nations. Don't have mercy on any rebellious wicked one, Sela. And here's where the historical reference of David making a midnight escape from Saul's minions becomes problematic. That is, up to now, we had the idea of an orev of this, people looking to catch him in the middle of the night, which was very compatible. But all of a sudden, we're talking about Kol Hagoyim. So who are all these Kol Hagoyim? It doesn't sound like Saul. It doesn't sound like Saul's messengers. Now our psalm sounds like a national prayer for salvation against an enemy's army. Kol HaGoyim is mentioned again in another three verses, in verse 9. And in verse 12, the psalmist seeks to be speaking for the sake of his nation, as he says, Ami. So these references, whereas the psalm started with personal references that could easily match the story about how Saul tried to kill him, these references are so out of place for such a story that the Radak, the medieval commentary Rabbi David Kimchi, says that this verse is actually spoken with prophecy and refers not to David's story, but to the times of the Mashiach. Radak says, Ze'eno nikshar lo lefanav lo la'acharav. This verse is not connected, i.e. chronologically, neither with what is preceded nor with what follows. That doesn't mean that Radak doesn't find a thematic connection of this verse, which speaks about the many nations, to the rest of the psalm, which speaks a lot about personal troubles. He does. He finds a connection, although he certainly stretches for it. And the reason he must stretch for it and put it in the times of the messianic times is that if we limit the psalm to its specific historic event or context, which is mentioned in the inscription, then eventually, surely, you're going to have to squeeze the things in the psalm which simply do not fit. Now, no doubt there are some psalms that are written wholly under the context of the situation that are ascribed to it, which is what I said in Psalm 51, which is the Bathsheba incident, and in Psalm 56, where he is a captive in Gat and needs to pretend to be insane in order to escape. But in most cases, I think that the psalm is inspired by, but not limited to, the events that are ascribed in the inscription. Still, I'll try to stretch it a bit as well, just like the Radak did, and as we go on, I'll see if I could connect Kol HaGoyim to King Saul specifically rather than some foreign enemy. But since the historical content is not really the point of the psalm, because psalms are universal, it's essential that we look not so much for historical clues, but we look for the psalm itself to try to understand what the message of the psalmist is. And here, what really sends the message loud and clear is the structure of the psalm itself, and it's an exceptional structure. I'm going to describe it to you now, but describing it over this recording is something like listening to a hockey game on the radio. Without the visuals, it's not quite the same. So I've asked the OU to include a PDF with the structure of the poem as I see it, and I would suggest that you take a look at the file and go over it as I give my play-by-play as to the psalm structure. First of all, the psalm is clearly divided into two sections or two stanzas, since both are completed by a nearly identical primary refrain. The refrain reads as follows, Uzo elecha eshmora ki Elohim miskabi, at the end of the first stanza, and Uzi elecha azameira ki Elohim miskabi, at the end of the second section. It would be convenient to change the Uzo of the, which means his strength, at the end of the first section, the first stanza, to match the Uzi, or my strength, of the second stanza, since it's easier to translate, and also it makes things nice and neat. But all we have is our holy text to go by, and therefore we must trust that the Masorah that handed down the text from generation to generation is in a pristine state. At least that should be our first assumption. And also notice that the term Oz is not the only change in this repeated refrain. Eshmora in the first section becomes Azamera in the second one. Eshmora means to guard, Azamera means to sing. So not only do these two verbs not look alike or sound alike, their meaning is not really related, and as such, it's not easy for them to be confused. And therefore, if we could assume that change from one refrain to the other, there's no reason that we can't assume that Uzo changes to Uzi. Another justification for there being two different kinds of Ozes in the refrain, the first one being Uzo, his strength, and the second one, Uzi, is that the word Oz is a theme or a motif of this psalm. Oz appears four times in this psalm, and each time it is used differently. The enemy who surrounded the psalmist in verse 4, as described in verse 4, are referred to as Azim. Then, these people we thought were the guards that were sent by Saul, but it could be any enemy sent to trap or destroy the psalmist. So the first Uzo of the first refrain is his strength, which I believe is an accusation against the enemy, the Azim of verse 4. But by the final line, the psalmist is so confident, he speaks about Uzi, not worrying about the strength of the enemy, Uzo, but speaking about his own strength, which is God, or Uzi. Getting back to the structure of the psalm, the second half of the psalm is enveloped by the words Elohei Chasdi, which extends the final line and the final refrain, which means the second stanza begins with the word Elohei Chasdi and ends with the word Elohei Chasdi, which follows the last refrain. One should translate this as not Elohei Chasdi, but really as Elohei Chesed Shali, meaning it's not me who's being faithful, but it means my faithful God. And the sense that David is trying to get across is the God that I can rely on to save me, Elohei Chesed Shali, Elohei Chasdi. This speaks to the confidence which envelops the second section, confidence that is sorely missing from the first section. There's also a secondary refrain if we further and analyze the structure. A secondary refrain that precedes each primary refrain by exactly three verses. The secondary refrains compare the enemy to barking dogs. But in the first stanza, the dogs are powerful and frightful in their bark and even worse in their bite. In the second stanza, they are like starving dogs wandering and whining for scraps. So while we have a repeated refrain, a secondary refrain, and we have the same type of imagery, we go from a powerful imagery of the enemy, which indicates that we are feeling very weak, to a very weak image of the enemy, which means that we are very confident and strong. The first section's secondary refrain, that is the refrain about the dogs, is followed by the words, Hine yabiyun, behold they howl. The second section's secondary refrain is followed by Hema yiniun. Notice the assonance between the two, which creates a powerful musical contrast between the state of the dogs in the two different stanzas. Enveloping the two-line simile of the vicious dogs in section one is a call to God, Ve'ata, and you. That is, before we talk about these horrible dog-like enemies, we say Ve'ata, calling to God for help in the most direct and desperate way, and then after the secondary refrain about the dogs, we again call to God, Ve'ata. This desperation is confirmed by the desperate commands or requests, Hakitza, Re'e, Ura, arise, look, wake up. This is also evident in that the verse, instead of moving from one call to another call, from Ura and Re'e directly to Hakitza, before he does that, the author invokes a litany of God's names, Ve'ata, Adonai, Elohim, Tzva'ot, Elohei, Israel. This is the exact opposite of what we find in section 2, where the two-line simile of the pathetic dogs is not followed by the word ata, calling out by to God, but it's followed by the word va'ani, and I, as the confident author promises to sing the praises of God. So in the first section, the refrain is surrounded by va'ata, va'ata, and in the second section is surrounded by a confident va'ani, an I. And now, before returning to the line-by-line translation, let's review the lines that we've already translated. First, we had an invocation of God and a two-line general petition, rescue me, rescue me. Following this was a two-line indictment of the enemies for chasing him when he had done no wrong in general and had done them no wrong in particular. We then had an extended line of poetry in verse 6 as David interrupts his desperate calls to wake up with a list of God's names and therefore a definition of the ability of God to save him. And now in verse 8, we have the first of the secondary refrains, the simile of the dog pack. Yashuvu la'erev yehemu chakalev visovavu ir. They return in the evening, they bark like dogs who roam around the city. So is David referring to the guard sent by Saul to keep him under house arrest, or is he describing an enemy that is encamped outside a city? I don't know, maybe both, maybe neither. I'll just focus on the beauty of the simile as the dogs turn from frightening now to pathetic by the end of the psalm. Hine yabiyun b'fihem charavot b'siftotehem ki mi shomea. Listen to, literally behold, the howls of in their mouths, the swords in their lips, since who will hear? This last piece, since who will hear, are the words of the dogs themselves, who are so sure that no one will hear the screams of their victims that they do whatever they please. The image of swords in their lips is, of course, fangs, but the referent is the prideful, evil snarling of the enemies. So the psalmist counters with mockery. Not only will God listen, but God will mock them for the way that they are, the way that they're behaving. Ve'ata Adonai tischak lamo tilag l'chol goyim. But you, O God, you will laugh at them. You will mock l'chol goyim, all the nations. Now, if I was to historicize, I might say that perhaps chol goyim is a reference to Saul. Maybe it is a nickname, the one who is king over all the tribes, including David's rather separate tribe of Judah. But God has promised to oust Saul because of his sins. Remember when he didn't kill off the Amaleki as he was supposed to. And perhaps this is what David meant in verse 6 when he said, Hakitza lifkod kol agoyim. So Hakitza means to wake up, but it also comes from the word kates, meaning the end. So David might have been saying to God, let the end come to this kol hagoyim, Remember, Pakod, what you said you would do, which is to remove him from his kingship and to put me in his place. So Kol HaGoyim and Kol Goyim might be nicknames for Saul, even though they're not used anywhere else in the historical books of the Bible. And that would then historicize this psalm, putting it back to the specific event where Saul tried to have David killed. Or perhaps the psalmist simply refers to the enemies that war against Israel without justification, and it is an ahistoric or an eternal universal psalm. And now we come to the primary refrain, which ends the first stanza. Uzo elecha eshmora ki Elohim iskabi, his strength. I said, and I am going to keep my word, that I wasn't going to change this to Uzi, even though many translations do, and even though some manuscripts actually have Uzi as well. So I'm going to say the word Uz and Oz is used too often in this psalm and in too many interesting ways to ignore the possibility that our author is using it in a multifaceted way here as well. Therefore, his strength against you, I will keep. That is, I will keep in mind and I will keep in my heart the fact that he uses his strength against you, God. Ki Elohim miskabi, because, or rather, God is my shelter. His strength is, I think, the strength of the enemy, of Kol Goyim. And again, whether it refers to King Saul or to an apocalyptic gathering of the enemies against Israel, as Radak would have it, it is an accusation that their strength is used against God, and the author won't forget it. Note that the word miskav, a high shelter, appears in the first line, and now it appears in the last line of section 1, making that word the envelope, the literary envelope, called in fancy terms an inclusio for stanza 1. And now on to section 2. Stanza 2 begins with the envelope, with its own envelope, Elohei Chasdi, O my faithful God. Note that while it's pronounced Chasdi, the ktiv is written Chasdo. But this probably is a scribal error, because some scribe at some point thought that it was the end of the refrain from the previous verse. Why? Because at the end of the refrain in the second verse, we also have the words Elohei Chasdi, but that's not the end of the refrain, it's the end of the whole stanza. Therefore, he also probably saw the word Uzi in the second refrain and Uzo in the first refrain, and therefore, because he had Chasdi in the second refrain, he had Chasdo in the first refrain. I know that's a little bit complicated, but if you look at my chart that I put online, you'll see that it all kind of makes sense. In any event, this is not a refrain at all. It's part of the inclusio or the envelope for the second stanza, Elohei Chasdi. And in fact, the mistake was apparently identified because it was changed from Chasdo to Chasdi, meaning that either Ezra the scribe or another one of his scribes, a student perhaps, set it back by changing the kri, back to Chasdi. Yikadmeni Elohim yareini bishorarai, switching to third person, he says, God will meet me and will show me my enemies, which means he will show me their downfall. We have switched to great confidence in the second section, which I mentioned above, which really changes the mood from the desperate to the exultant. Al targem pen yishkechu ami, haniemo b'chelecha v'horidemo magineinu Adonai. Don't kill them, lest my nation forget. With your force make them wanderers and bring them low, O my Lord, our shield. This sounds, of course, like an attack by many enemies against the psalmist's forces in Israel. Note the plural magineinu, our shield. Now, I would like to say that David wants to leave the enemy around in mercy, but the verse says otherwise. It seems that he wants to leave them alive and leave them around because he wants his own nation, either Judah or all of Israel, to remain united against a common enemy. Or perhaps, the way he's describing it, by scattering them, they will serve as a long-term object lesson for how God deals with the psalmist's enemies. And now he explains why the enemy deserves it. Chatat pimo divar sfatemo vilachidu bigaonam umeala umekachash yisaperu. The sins of their mouths, the word of their lips, they will be captured by their own pride and from the curses and the lies that they tell. This recalls the simile in section 1 of the dogs and their fanged lips and pride. So we have lips over there and we have lips over here. And the pride that those dogs could do whatever they want since nobody was around, or they said nobody was going to pay any attention or stop them from doing what they're doing. Kalei b'chema, kalei ve'enemo v'yedu, ki Elohim moshel b'yakov v'afse ha'aretz zela. finish them with wrath, finish them off until they are gone. This may not be a call for their utter destruction, because he said he actually wanted them not to be destroyed as much as he wanted them to be scattered, but it may just be a call for their inability, the destruction of a unified force that could attack him, since God will make wanderers out of them and therefore make them ineffective. Getting back to the verse, and then they will know that God rules in Jacob, they will know it to the ends of the earth. Back to the simile now of the dog pack, which is now defeated. V'yashuvu la'erev yehemu chakalev v'sovavu ir hema yaniun le'echol im lo yisbe'u v'yalinu. And they will go back in the evening like a dog wandering the city. They will whine to eat when they are hungry, and after that they will lie down to sleep. With confidence, our dogs are defanged. Va'ani, but me. But I, Ashir Uzecha Varanein Laboker Chasdecha, Kiayita Miskavli Umanos Biyom Sarli. But me, I will sing of your strength. Note that our Psalm 90:59 has Azim, the strong ones, Uzo, his strength, Uzecha now in this verse, Ani Ashir Uzecha, I will sing about your strength, and in the next verse, Uzi, my strength. Returning to our verse, and in the morning I will sing happily of your faithfulness, your loving kindness, how you are a high refuge for me, a haven in troubled times. Uzi Elecha Zamera Ki Elohim Iskabi Elohei Chasdi. Ending up the poem, ending the stanza, we have the refrain and then the envelope. My strength, referring directly to God now, I will sing about you. I will sing that God is my fortress. I will sing that God is my faithful God. Note that by singing that God is his Miskav, it takes us, his high fortress, that takes us back to the envelope word of the first section, the inclusio of the first stanza. And by saying that he's going to sing about his faithful God, Elohei Chasdi, that takes us back to the envelope of the second section. So as a very clever infinite loop, the psalm curves back on itself structurally. The psalmist promises at the end of this psalm that he will write and sing this very two-part psalm. He is, without question, a talented and inspired poet in word, feeling, sound, and now, as we could see, in structure as well.